The 9th Annual Women's History Month Film Festival, Women in Media in Newark, bringing us Passages, Women in Transition. That's the theme for this year's festival that we look forward to. It's a free festival, but brings in tremendous talent. And two of the women filmmakers involved in this effort are right here back in the studio. We are glad to say welcome back to Nefertiti Nguvu and Ibi Bassi. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having us back. Yes, it's always absolutely a pleasure to talk to you.
Two amazing films that you have put together here. Let's talk about first, coming up on Tuesday, March 27th at the Newark Museum. Ibi, your film is entitled Saving Father. It's a deep subject, and it's a subject that I know that you're passionate about because it deals with HIV in seniors.
Yes.
How did this all come about where you thought that this was an issue? Because the statistics, I think, show that I think it's alarming that people might not be aware.
Absolutely. Actually, it started with my aunt. She was in her 60s, and she was dating a guy that was in his 30s. So it did worry me a little bit. That kind of triggered it for me. And I just started reading up on this. And my mom at one point, you know, after losing her partner of 27 years, was on dating website, you know, all these senior dating websites. And I was a little nervous about that. And for both of them, I said, look, dating today is not dating during the Woodstock era. This is like a whole totally different environment. And it was kind of weird having that sort of conversation or even thinking about that sort of thing with my mom and my aunts, you know. But it got me to thinking, got me to just really looking at it and doing some research. And like you said, I just thought it was really alarming, the amount of people that don't know, even doctors, even in speaking to doctors, they see patients that are senior citizens, and that's the last thing on their minds is HIV or sexual activity of anything. They just look at the basic, you know, diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, or those general things, but they don't consider that this person could be sexually active or that it's a possibility that they could have HIV or AIDS. And in some cases, seniors actually end up having late stage HIV, which turns into obviously AIDS, because they wait so long or because they don't get checked for such a long time that it's not quite at the right time for doctors to do anything about it.
Hey, lady, get out of my house right now.
Ain't nobody trying to hurt you, old man. Your baby girl loves you. Can't you get that in your thick head?
I ain't nobody's old man.
Having a conversation about unprotected sex with a senior can be a difficult one.
Yes, embarrassing, to say the least. And also, you face a lot of resistance because they don't want to talk about it. You know, it's my business. Why is that your business? You know, but we need to push as children, as advocates. We need to push. Doctors need to be a little more open to their idea of what they think seniors do or what seniors are. There are a lot of seniors that are very sexually active. A lot of them don't think that HIV/AIDS is something that affects them. You know, the women think, oh, I'm not going to get pregnant, so why do I need a condom? But the fact is your vaginal walls are thinner, so the likelihood of the disease passing through is much easier. Some think, oh, I wasn't an IV drug user. I'm not gay, so that's not my problem. But it is, because you don't know what your partner was doing. Even if they were married 50 years, you don't know what they were doing in their marriage. That can affect your life. So as advocates, as medical practitioners and social service people need to be more curious about what is going on. And seniors need to also understand that it's not being invasive. We're trying to save your life here. So
you're listening to the WBGO Journal, and we're talking to two filmmakers, Ibi Bassi and Nefertiti Nguvu. Their films are a part of the 9th Annual Women's History Month Festival put together by Women in Media Newark. Both of you play roles in your film. So, Ibi, before we talk to Nefertiti about her film, Myself When I Am Real, in your film, Saving Father, tell us a little bit about how you have set this up.
Well, in the film, my mom has passed, and my father, I have him move in with me to get him, you know, just kind of out of that house, out of, you know, from the, away from the memories, and just have him stay with me so I could look, you know, just take good care of him. And unfortunately, he sees this time as a new lease on life, and now I can really live. And so we are having this issue of where it's just kind of the flip side, where the daughter's being the responsible one and the father's being the irresponsible one. And us just kind of living in silence around this big elephant in the room. And so at the end of the film, we just kind of come to a head with it, where I end up having to really speak my mind and say, look, things aren't working out. You're not living this kind of life. I need you to take better care of yourself. And it shows a little resistance on his part. And then he eventually realizes that, yes, I am right. And he does need to do better.
Powerful films, whether they be short or whether they be long in nature, those that deal with relationships are the ones that people can really feel inside. And for you, Nefertiti Nguvu, your film, Myself When I Am Real, deals with a relationship that is souring because of some tragic events, but maybe it started to dissipate before that. Set us up with Myself When I Am Real.
Sure. Well, first I'll say that because I'm sitting here at WBGO, the title of the film is actually the title that I borrowed from my favorite Mingus tune, and Myself When I'm Real. And so the film is essentially about a couple who is going through therapy, and it is revealed in therapy that one of the events that sort of triggered this lapse between them is the murder of the family member of the brother, the husband. His brother is murdered by police violence.
My brother didn't die. He was murdered.
I'm sorry, I didn't realize. Is that something we can talk more about?
Julian was murdered by an undercover police officer. Mistaken identity. The officer followed Julian home, approached him in the driveway, and
when he reached for his wallet to prove he was who he said he was, he shot him. 6 times. It's been all over the news for a while now.
Yes, I know the story quite well. I didn't know that was your brother. What a horrible thing to endure.
What prompted the fact that this person was murdered by a police officer?
I was really, really deeply affected, as many people were, last summer, with just the constant barrage of all these things that were happening, of police who were actually murdering black and brown folks and getting away with it. And I would just look at their families on the news, and I just wonder to myself, like, how are they surviving? Like, I know how I feel, and it's not my brother, my uncle, my sister, my nephew. So I have no idea how they're coping, and it's their family member. You know what I mean? It's like you have to watch not only this thing that happens over and over again on our 24-hour news cycle, but it's also, it's your family member that you're never going to see again, and the likelihood that you'll receive justice, as we all know, is very slim. So I was just deeply affected by that and just wondering, what's happening to these families? How are they coping? It was the murder of Eric Garner. And then, as we see, his daughter recently passed away. So it's something that, you know, it's the ripple effect of this tragedy, this trauma, that I was really interested in sort of taking a deeper look at.
The couple in this film, portrayed by Jackie Ito and Janelle Kennedy, two of the actors that were in The Morning,
yes,
which has received rave reviews all over the world and all kinds of awards. Mm-hmm. Jackie and Janelle are really powerful together. Obviously, you knew of their work. And did you, when you did In the Morning, was this film already in your head saying, yes, I want Jackie and Janelle to play this role?
It wasn't, actually, because there was such a long time between making In the Morning and making this film. But when this project, when I had the opportunity to make this film, I should say it was through George Mason University. I was a part of their visiting filmmakers lab. So we shot this down in Virginia, where the school is located. And I knew that it would require that I bring actors in, that we all had to stay together and things like that. Just a level of intimacy that I felt like, okay, this, to me, I feel like the most, what I really wanted to do was work with actors that I already had a level of intimacy with. And, you know, having worked with Jackie and Jonelle before, I think that they're both incredibly skilled actors. I knew what they could bring to it, and I also knew what their chemistry is like together. So when I wrote the piece, I definitely thought about them and bringing them down to Virginia so that we can work on this piece together.
During the Oscars, it was made clear that women are getting more opportunities now than ever before, but maybe necessarily not women of color are getting the opportunities that, that you want. Ebi, when did you get a chance to watch the awards?
No.
I think that says something to me. Yeah,
it was actually either. The lowest watch at 26.2 million,
you're
something
right.
As my president or let me know today.
that is true. But one of the things that's so interesting about both of you is that you don't just make films. You're both actresses. You're both, you know, you're writers, directors. You take the whole business, the whole role. You just got off a 2.5-month run on Broadway. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that was really exciting, and it was really like a dream come true for me because I've been in the business in a while, but and I've done off Broadway stuff. So this was like my first time on off Broadway, and not only did I get to act, but I got to do so many other things. A lot of actor friends that came couldn't believe that they were like, "Wait, we didn't know you could sing." Never had an opportunity to, so this gave me one. And I being that I'm West African, I'm Nigerian, and the play was based on a character from Nigeria, so I got to use a lot of my culture and really put my culture out there in a major way, doing the songs, doing the dialect coaching. I speak multiple languages, and being an actor in it as well, and doing the dramaturgy, making sure that culturally they were on the right path. It was just really awesome. It was a great play by Ngozi Anyanwu, playwright, up-and-coming playwright from Nigeria, Nigerian-American, and it was about a writer coming from Nigeria, coming from America back to Nigeria to transition her father from this life. But since she ran away from a major traumatic event, she had to come back and face that. And she had to also come back and face the fact that she wasn't as comfortable with the culture as she was before she left, which a lot of us face when you go home and, you know, you're now Americanized. Back home, people don't care. Your aunt will slap you in a minute. They don't care. You're American. Who cares? You know? And so she had to deal with these women in her village, deal with her father, deal with not being able to speak the language as well, and dealing with the trauma that sent her running off to the United States in the first place, and then dealing with her father having to pass away. So it was really deep. It was a lot. It was very heavily emotionally, but it was also very satisfying. At the end of each run, you just felt like you left it all on the stage, and people came back for more. People came 2 and 3 times to see this, you know. People were crying in the audience. It was that touching, and it also goes to show that even though it's a Nigerian story, it's a human story. And I hate the fact that in film, in plays, in theater, people have this closed-off mindset. You know, the way I cry as a Nigerian is no different from the way a Chinese person cries. Why do we always have to put these boxes around ourselves? Just tell a human story that anybody can relate to, and everybody will enjoy it. Even most of the people that came to see the show were Caucasian. But they connected to this character. They connected to loss and feeling lost, even, and feeling alone, even though you're surrounded by people. And you know, the character had a bit of a mental issue, like bipolar or depression, so to speak. Everybody can understand that. Anybody can get that, you know, feeling so lost and alone and not knowing where you fit in the world. you know.
You're listening to the WBGO Journal, and we're talking to two filmmakers, E.B. Bassi and Nefertiti Nguvu. Their films are a part of the 9th Annual Women's History Month Festival put together by Women in Media Newark. You are both a testament to the power of the Women in Media Film Festival here in Newark, run by Pamela Morgan.
The great Pamela Morgan.
She is great, isn't she? She's a fabulous, fabulous lady who happens to be sitting right behind me as we do this this interview. We love her here at WBGO very much, and I know that you do too. You both have reached, you know, international acclaim, but you come back to this festival. Tell us why, Nefertiti.
It's home. I think it's so important for. I feel like I'm definitely a filmmaker whose work has been nurtured in Black film festivals in particular, and this film festival being a festival that's catered towards Black women filmmakers, catered towards telling stories about women of the diaspora. It's so important, and it's so important to have it here in the city of Newark, which is my hometown. So this festival is home to me. I decided that I wanted to be a filmmaker when I saw Gordon Park's film, The Learning Tree, at the Newark Black Film Festival. So you can't ever underestimate the power of what it means for our communities to bear witness to films by filmmakers who reflect their cultural experiences.
And you have a documentary out about Newark.
Yes, I do, which was like my first time working in my hometown. As much as Newark has shaped me as an artist, I've never had the opportunity to make work here. So it was something I was super excited to do. It's called Newark Art for the People, and it's all about the mural projects that Newark has throughout the city and how they're using art to build Newark's sort of cultural renaissance again.
For you. What does this festival mean for you, Evie?
Everything that Nefertiti said. As a matter of fact, actually, Nefertiti introduced me to Miss Pamela Morgan and to this film festival. And like she said, it's home. You feel like your project is cared for and you're respected as an artist and your viewpoint. They're excited about it as much as you are and want it to get out there as much as you do. And for me also, I feel like this film festival, it's small compared to all of these big ones, you know. And so why not put our support behind a woman who is trying to bring acclaim and trying to bring attention to artists in Newark, which, you know, people don't think of Newark, you know, brick city, and they have bad things to say about this city. But this city has amazing people that are doing art for the people and that are putting out good, positive images about the city. And for her to take that on is amazing. And taking it on in the middle of, you know, before Cory Booker, before it became, oh, we're gentrifying, we're bringing Prudential. She was doing this before that. And so it just goes to show that it's not about fame or that. It's about the love of where she's from and the love for Black women and giving opportunities to Black women to do what they love, because we don't really get that shine. How many Ava DuVernays do we have? We just have one and one Oprah and one. It seems like there's always one or a new first. To think that we're still having first of anything Black in 2018, you know, we have Jordan Peele. How many Black writers have we had that in all these years, 90 years of Academy, one, you know? So I'm happy and blessed to know Miss Pamela Morgan. Even if she never picks another film of mine, I will still be behind her and support as much as I can.
Somehow we think she will, though. And she also has great taste in music, but that's besides the point. She is definitely a jazz fan and a fan of WBGO. I wanted to talk about, too, though, when it comes to the festival. People see the finished product. They don't see the hard work that goes into these films. Mm-hmm. It costs money. I saw a video of you, Ebi, saying, I need some help. I need some help. If you have $100, if you have 20, if you give me a gift card that I can pay, you know, the actors for
that sounds
for a
like
break.
Something I would say.
it costs a lot of money to put a production together.
It really does. I remember when Neff was trying to get money for in the morning, and we were at Newark, and we had that fundraiser.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my goodness. It really is. It's just sad that people put art on such a low level. It's the first thing they cut in school, is the first thing they cut funding for, but they forget that art feeds people. It feeds your spirit, it feeds your soul, which is just as important as every other thing that people do. You know, even doctors, if you want to cure a kid, you make them laugh, you show them a film, you know. Laughter is medicine to the soul, and I think we forget that. And so when you want to make a project, people look at you like, what? They would spend $3,000 on a pair of shoes, but to give you $25 for a film, they feel like it's just this big sacrifice. I hate to say prideful, but I do have a certain amount of ego, and asking for help is just not my favorite thing to do. With my first film, I dipped into my 401k. Boom, it was done. But with this film, I said, no, I'm not playing with my 401k in this economy, so let me try another route. And it was really difficult. Even people that I knew have it, I knew it meant it would not cost them anything. It was still like pulling teeth. I mean, eventually it happened, but I made it by the skin of my teeth with, you know, I first started out with Indiegogo, and then I had to put that on hold because it wasn't coming as quickly, and I was so discouraged. And then my husband said, well, listen, you're almost there, don't give up, this is too important a story. So I picked up again with GoFundMe, and somehow we were able to get it together. A couple of restaurants were offering, you know, I asked, and they offered some free food. You know, actors were like, okay, we'll cut down on our pay. I hired myself, so I don't have to pay one extra person.
And that's a big thing.
Yeah. And the production company I worked with, they were really, really very supportive of this story and wanted to get it made. So they also were like, okay, we'll, you know, cut our pay down, and we just want to make it happen for you. And it's just been... ooh, by the skin of my teeth, we got it done.
I just wanted to add something and talking about how much money it takes to make a film, because this is a conversation I've been having a lot recently, talking about how African-Americans have excelled in so many other forms of art at such a high level, and why we haven't seemed to be able to make that same breakthrough in film. I think because it's such an expensive medium. The medium itself costs so much money. It's like you can excel as a jazz musician because you have your mind, you have your instrument, and you can sit and like Coltrane and Sonny Rollins and all those people.
And now with all
craft,
these gadgets, exactly, you can just get, even your phone, you can make music on.
Through deepening your practice, practicing for 15 hours a day, you know what I mean? Yeah. But for film, it takes so many people, it takes so much money. And so there's so many economic factors, I think, that play specifically into this medium that really do inhibit.
If you want to do quality work. Mm-hmm. Now, if you just want to do something roughshod, I guess you could just grab a camera and run around town. But if you want to do something quality, and also, you know, as a filmmaker, you also want to be fair to the people that you are working with, you know, your actors. And I hate when people say, oh, we'll give you reel and exposure. Man, reel and exposure does not buy bread, okay? Like, I need money. I need to live. And so when you want to do that, when you want to be fair to your artists, when you want to be fair to your cast and your crew, you need money. You need to be out there hustling. And thank God for these platforms to raise money. Because grant writing, I tried the grant route, that was really, really rough. You know, you write these letters, you put the application in, that's money you're spending just not to get anything back. You know, how many times can you tap on family? After a while, they see you, your phone number on the pop up, and they're like, nah, you know. So
one of the wonderful things, speaking of needing money, is you don't need money to attend the Women in Media Film Festival because it's free. And the film coming up, Myself When I Am Real, Nefertiti Ngubu's film, is Saturday, March 31st at the Paul Robeson Campus Center around noontime. That will be showing. You are off camera in this film, playing the role of the psychiatrist or marriage counselor, or however that may be. Obviously a conscious decision of your own to keep this on the faces of the couple.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's not something that I thought about doing when I went into it. I actually was going to hire an actress to play that part. But when we got to set, and I was going to have it recorded like after the fact, but when we got to set, after having the rehearsal process with Jackie and Jonelle, I had just planned to read them off camera sitting away behind my director's monitor, but it just wasn't working. It just played so much better when I sat actually in the chair and had an interaction with them. It just really worked for the material, I think, you know, having the relationship that I have with them as actors, as collaborators, and having sort of workshop the material with them. It just works so much better. And I realized then that was like, okay, if I hate it, if it sounds horrible, it's very easy to like edit my voice out and replace myself. But it seemed to work, so I kept it.
One of the interesting things of the film that I looked at was the fact that sometimes as a couple, you say things that you almost can't take back.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a part in this film where she says to her husband something that really bothers him.
She says the most ridiculous things. One morning, a few weeks after it happened, so calmly and casually, she said,
it's like all of a sudden you've realized you're black. And now you don't know what to do. It's a very strange thing to witness.
It was so savage. With every intention to slaughter. As if Julian's murder somehow equated into some exclusive right to blackness I've never before attained.
I definitely agree in the sense that, you know, there are these things that, you know, sometimes in the course of intimate relationships, we say that we can't take back. And I think, you know, with this couple in particular, it's just, I think her expressing that at that moment is just trying to get a reaction out of him and trying to sort of shake something out of him because he's been so despondent and having to deal with his brother's death. And I think she's sort of resentful in a sense that, you know, he comes from a certain amount of privilege that she doesn't come from. And she's sort of stunned to see that for him, the way she's reading is that he has this sense of like outrage that this could happen to him, that this could happen to his family, that this happened to those people, not people who are respectable and do everything correctly. So it's something I think she says to sort of like shake him out of this state. And that's something that I felt like, you know, writing about a couple of a certain amount of privilege too, I feel like, you know, we all have these myths that we believe about black respectability, like mm-hmm. certain things won't happen to you if you do the right thing, mm-hmm. if you get up every day and go, you know what I mean? It's
yeah.
just like, but it doesn't really matter. You know what I mean? When it all comes, when it's all said and done. And so that's something that I wanted to deal with too, is like, let's take a family that doesn't look like the type of family that we would think that quote unquote, these types of things happen to. Let's examine the fact that it can happen to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And that we all, at the end of the day, have to deal with these tragedies until we face them collectively.
It's sort of kind of what I was just saying. It's humanity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it knows no socioeconomic background. It knows none of that. If it rains, it's going to rain on your roof as hard as it rains on
mm-hmm.
another. But I get what you're saying, though, because sometimes I think certain black folks in certain socioeconomic strata always think, well, if he wasn't doing that.
Right. And well, it's the mythology that we've all been
all
fed.
Built, yeah.
We have all been
yeah.
fed that mythology.
If you
that
went
if you
to
do,
Harvard,
exactly.
if you went to certain schools, this shouldn't happen to you. But we've had celebrities
pull
getting
up by
pulled.
Your bootstraps.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But we've had celebrities in fancy cars get pulled over, and they're not those kinds of people,
mm-hmm.
but it happens to them.
Yeah. So yeah. it's just, you know, I feel it. I wanted to create this film as a mirror for us to be able to examine things a little bit deeper.
Everybody can take yeah. that film and look into their own relationship too, right?
I hope so. You know, I think that's the thing that touches me about films that are essentially relationship-driven stories. Like, Ingmar Bergman is one of my favorite filmmakers of all times, and I can look at his work. He certainly wasn't thinking about black women from Newark when he made his films. But I can look at them and be incredibly moved by them, because through the specificity becomes the universal. You know what I mean? They're so specific and truthful about what it means to be human, what it means to love, to loss, to live, to be alive.
To grieve.
I can look at a film like that and see myself in it. And I hope the same is true for the work that I'm creating.
Evie, what would be the best compliment you would get from somebody regarding your film at this point?
It got my father, it got my mother, it got my aunt to get tested. That's the best compliment I can get, is if the film can cause someone to think about themselves or a family member, if it can get someone to the doctor's clinic, to the clinic to get checked out, I think I would have done what I started out to do. If it gets people talking, if it gets the doctors talking and saying, you know, we need to do better with how we treat our senior patients, then that'll be the best compliment. I went and got myself checked. I went and took my mother, and we both went and got ourselves checked. That would be, and your film made me think about that.
Yeah. Obviously, a film festival is a great place to display any kind of ideas and films, but this is specifically, and it could be targeted, but it's specifically targeted to seniors for the most part, but or someone who's going to talk to seniors, right?
Yeah.
So where do you see this film being played? Where would you like beyond, you know, beyond the average? Where can this go? Can this go into developments? Can it go into...
That has always been my primary thought. If in people having orientations at senior facilities, at nursing homes, assisted living facilities, and they have orientation, and this could be part of that orientation process, I think would be great. And that's what I would love for it to eventually end up doing out there. Not necessarily looking, I'm not going to make anything off of this. It was never started with that intention. The intention was to draw attention, drum up conversation about this. I mean, 47% of people with HIV/AIDS are African American, compared to 17% of Hispanics, you know, or 7% of whites. We need to do something, and it's not just about black folks. It's just about seniors in general, point blank period, whether they're gay, bisexual, or straight. It just needs to be talked about. So for me, that would be ideal, to have this be part of an orientation packet for an incoming senior to any facility.
In our annual interview about this festival, we don't always have two filmmakers who are familiar with each other. So I'm going to take advantage of this. Hebe, what's something that you admire, or something we don't know about Nefertiti that you think our audience should know?
I think you know the most. She's just, she has the biggest heart. She really is. She's a kind and sweet and generous person, not just only as a filmmaker, but as a human being, and highly intelligent and just so curious about life, about art, about people, about, you know, cultures. She's really such an... She just came back from Thailand for her birthday. She lives her fullest life, and that is one thing I, and she's so cool, calm, and collected. Things would be falling apart, and inside she's falling apart, but on the outside it's like, she's like, yeah, okay, we got this, we could do this, and I love that about her. I love her curiosity about life. I love her high intellect, her ambition, which doesn't come across as opportunistic. You know, she's just a strong individual who knows what she wants, and she knows her trajectory, and she aims for it. And she meets all these wonderful, wonderfully talented people, but she doesn't brag about it. She's not arrogant about it. She's confident, but without the arrogance. And she's been a sister to me, and we've worked together before. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to working with her again, as a filmmaker and just as a collaborator in general. Yeah, so, yeah.
Your turn.
Oh, well, I will say first, At the very first Women in Media Newark Film Festival, the film that I showed was the film that we worked on together, which was The End of Winter.
And I think I was the moderator for, like, I'd ask you. Yeah, and then my film, Saving Father, you ended up moderating and asking me the question. So
so I will say about Ebi, what, because her talent and all these things are very, very obvious and widely known, but one thing I think that may not be obvious is Ebi is a ferocious, ferocious spirit. She is someone who I admire so much, her tenacity and her strength. You know, we talk all the time about, you know, how challenging this business is for Black women, and it is. And that's something that we know as, like, an abstract political idea, but it's something that she and I know intimately as a personal struggle of, like, it takes so much courage to get up every single day and to do this and to be determined to kick doors down when they keep getting slammed in your face. And so I have so much admiration for the strength and the ferociousness and the tenacity that this woman has and continues to demonstrate and continues to show up and give every single opportunity 1,000%.
We have to ask you about Thailand. Tell us about
Thailand. Thailand was amazing. It was my first time in Asia. It was, you know, my birthday's in February, so it always is a snowstorm here. So I made this commitment to never be here on my birthday a few years ago. So Thailand was the place this year. I have a dear friend who lived there for 11 years who welcomed us and took us around town. It was just beautiful. The people there were just so warm and amazing. It's such a spiritual place. It was wonderful.
And I bet you the next project is probably going to be influenced by something that happened in Thailand, knowing her. She just doesn't go places and just chills. She chills, but meanwhile, her mind is going.
True.
You know, she's just picking out things
sponge,
like. Yeah. She's just absorbing it.
Right? That's where you draw from all kinds of
things. Oh, absolutely. I ride the subway in New York. That's inspiration all day long.
Women in Media Newark, run by Pamela Morgan. And we are thrilled that both these films, once again, on Tuesday, March 27, Saving Father will be running a little bit after 5 o'clock at the Newark Museum. And then on Saturday, March 31st, the Paul Robeson Campus Center at noontime will be Myself When I Am Real. Nefertiti and Ebi, what a pleasure to have you back on the WBGO Journal. Best of luck and continued success.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. Yes. Thank you so much.